our differential equation.
Thank you. The result I will speak about is a common work with Patrick Spitzager and Fernando Sanz. So it's the following. You take a system of a linear system of differential equation of this form. So why it's in R2 with a Poincaré rank Q bigger than or equal to 1. A has 0 non-Nilpotent. And A and B analytic. So in this situation, the result is that all the solutions are O-minimal together with analytic function. So theorem. Then H so let me just recall what non-oscillating solution means. So it means here a non-oscillating together with analytic sets. So here it means that if a function, an analytic function of x, h1 of x is equal to 0, this implies that f is equal to, So non-oscillating means that this equation has, the set of x such that this is equal to 0 has finitely many connected components. So this is what non-oscillating means. So this result is a part of a more general problem, which is given analytic vector fields in R3, we can ask whether if the non-oscillating solutions are O-minimal or not. And so this is just a part of this one, and there is another result which gives some other information on these trajectories, which is due to Roland Sanz and Chevke. And I will recall it because I will use it and use sometimes the same strategy. So I will explain a little bit this reason. You take a general analytic system of differential equation, so just x to the q plus 1 y prime equal to a of x y, a is analytic. Assume that the linear part has non-zero eigenvalues with different arguments, so that the Yeah, it's in RN. Oh, I forget the thing. So it's so you assume that all the eigenvalues are different arguments. So, yes. And second, you assume that you have a solution which has an asymptotic expansion H. So H. H. And you suppose that the Stokes phenomenon linked to H for H is non-trivial, at least for well one phenomenon, one Stokes phenomenon linked to H by eigenvalues is not trivial. So, so the Stokes. In this situation, so you have if so here H is a non-oscillating solution. Yeah, then H is omnimal, and in fact, polynomially bounded. And model complete. So, well, just looking like that, of course, this theorem is really more general than this one, but this one is not just a reject of this of that one. And I'll just give some examples. So. First of all, even the same strategy as here cannot work all the time. The simple example is when B is equal to 0, and let's say, for example, that A has two real eigenvalues, such so A of x is 1, 1, 0, for example, and B equals to 0. And you see that the solution, why? Will be exponential minus lambda over q. So this is a fundamental system of solutions, and you see that you have flatness, so it can of course not come into this kind of strategy cannot work in general. This is the simple example. And another example is, let's say, A of x is 1, 0, 0, plus x times 0, 1, 0. And B is different from 0. In this situation, you see that you have the same eigenvalues here, okay? So the theorem here doesn't apply, but since B is different from zero in the system here, Y can have a formal development, a non-zero formal development. So the solution, say H, is different from zero. So for a convenient choice of B, you can produce a formal non-zero solution, and you see that any two solutions of this system will satisfy the homogeneous C system with b equals to 0. And you see that since you have this term, the two solutions will oscillate, will turn one around the other. So it's an example where well, you cannot apply this result, and you have a linked solution in the interlaced solutions, and the theorem here says that the solution are omnimal.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
For asymptotic expansion H hat, you mean as a power series in X?
Yes. Well, okay, so I come back to the original problem here. So the first thing we can do is to discuss on the eigenvalues of A. I mean, of A of zero. So the easiest case in general is when the eigenvalues are different. So in this situation, since we have a real system here, we have either two eigenvalues which are complex conjugated, or two real different eigenvalues. So the first thing is, if they are not real but complex conjugated, the result is a consequence of the theorem of Rolland-Sanson-Chevke. If the Stokes phenomenon is not trivial, so I will explain after what the Stokes phenomenon is. We don't really need it. But so either the Stokes phenomenon is non-trivial, and then we can apply the theorem of Rolland-Sanson-Chevke. Otherwise, it is trivial, but it implies that in fact there exists an analytic solution, and all the other solutions will turn around this one. So there will be one non-oscillating solution which is a minimal since it is analytic, and the other solution will be not a minimal because it is oscillating. So this case is a consequence of the Rolland-Sanson-Chevke theorem. So the problem is when the eigenvalues are real. In this situation, we can actually we will see that we can normalize the system via a Pfaffian change of coordinate. So the idea x it's some of course we can suppose that A of zero is diagonal up to make a linear change of coordinate, but a constant linear change of coordinate. So the system has this form, and we want to change the variable so that the new variable satisfy a system, a diagonal system of equations. Which means, so we can put y equals t z, and we want that z verify x prime equal d z some cf. Well, d is diagonal. it's possible to make it with a matrix T of the following form 1 1 T 1. Okay. So, if we try to compute T so that it works, it gives us x cubed plus 1 y prime is equal to x cubed plus 1 y prime z. And we want z prime to be this, so it gives x to plus 1 t prime plus This is just obtained by derivating this equality, and on the other side it's equal to a y plus b, which is a z. We get the classical equation x q plus 1 q prime plus b minus. Z equals to C minus C. Can make the computation of this matrix. It gives us. I've done the calculus before. It's easier. So it gives us if A is the matrix. Gives us the system A1 This is the result of the computation of TD minus AT. Okay, so we want this term to be zero and this term to be zero. So since T has this form, we must have this equal to zero. Okay, so the derivative of this. This must be equal to the to x to the q plus 1 t to 1 and so on. So from the first equation here, this must be 0, so we can express d1 in terms of t to 1, and then we place d1 here, and it will give us an equation in which only t to 1 appears. So it's x q plus 1 t to 1 prime is equal to this, which is an analytic function in t to 1. Okay, and the same here with t 1 2. We get two differential equations, which are x q plus 1 is equal t 1 2 prime is equal to h 1. And the same kind of equation for T1, 2. So what is important here is that since the eigenvalues are different, so this is two analytic functions whose values at zero are the two eigenvalues. So since this is non-zero, we know that there exists a solution which takes the value 0 at 0, and which is Platin, because we have an equation in R2, and in R2 everything is Platin. So it gives us a Platin solution for T12, and the same holds for T21. So, and finally, it gives a T for solution which is Platin. After it, a T which is Platin here, and we want to make this equal to 0, so we just have to solve to choose C so that it is 0. So C will be Platin also, because this is the image of an analytic vector by a Platin function. And finally, Z will verify a system. Verify a system of equation of diagonal, a diagonal system of equation with Platin coefficient, and so it will be Platin again. So the conclusion is that we have Z which is Platin, and Y which is the image of Z by T. So it's and T is Platin, so it's Platin again. So finally, when the two eigenvalues are real and different, the solution is Platin. So it is omnimal in particular. Okay. So what happens if the two eigenvalues are equals? It may be problematic because this term is zero, and maybe we don't have a solution which goes to zero, except the trivial one. But there is some case where we can do it again. It's when a22 minus a11. So this is our function of x. If the two first eigenvalues are zero, we can just look at the term after, and if if it continues up to an order, let's say less than q plus 1, we will be able to do exactly the same computation. So, this computation, we obtain in fact the following proposition. In general, we can always reduce to a system of the following form: x to y prime equals to y plus. Here, so I just keep the first radial part of A, and here I have a J which has different eigenvalues. So there is the discussion we made here can be done in general. It means that if either R is bigger than Q, or if J, so J has two different eigenvalues. If J has two eigenvalues, okay, so this reasoning allows to conclude that the solution is taken when the first non-radial term has two different eigenvalues, which are real. You see that in this situation, the result is really different than the situation is very different from the one in this theorem, because here we will see that any two solutions are always linked, and here all the solutions belong to the same or minimal structure since they are present. Okay. So this is the first proposition, and so this part is the easy part. We can just make some computation, and now it's still we have to prove the minimality in the case where J here has different eigenvalues but complex conjugated one and not real one. In the proposition, in fact, in this case, we will adapt the proof of this theorem and arrive almost to the same conclusion. This means that any two solutions are interlaced, and they are all O-minimal one by one, but never O-minimal two by two. So proposition, if if G has any the theorem say, in fact, we arrive to the same description as here. This means that it is polynomially bounded and model complete. These two propositions finally prove the main theorem. So now we will adapt in this situation the strategy of this theorem. So I will recall briefly the strategy in this theorem and see how I can adapt it to this case. The result is that the structure is O-minimal and polynomially bounded, and the O-minimality comes from quasi-analyticity, as in many cases when it is polynomially bounded. And in general, to obtain a result of quasi-analyticity, we need to test on some big algebras that they are quasi-analytic. In fact, in this situation, it can be reduced. Well, the test can be reduced a lot because of the differential equation satisfied by the solution. So this is what I explain here. So, in fact, if H satisfies a differential equation, it also satisfied a kind of functional equation, and this is a proposition here. So, if H Well, okay, A is analytic and so on. Then H of x plus x to the plus 1 f of x G. Okay, so if H is the solution of a system of differential equation, if you compose here with an analytic function, with something which is tangent to the identity, and well, it is the analytic function plus this is the identity plus analytic function of order at least q plus 1. So you have composed H with something which is analytic. You can express it as an analytic function of H and X. Okay. So, and actually this proposition allows to reduce a lot the algebras that we have to consider to obtain the quasi-omnimality. Because you see that if you compose to the right, you can change it and in fact, one goes to the left. Yes. So I explain briefly the proof of this proposition. So I know by W of x y plus math x plus x q plus 1 y. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there any
f?
There is a g.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I put W of x y is equal to x h of x to the q plus 1 y, and I want to understand how W depends on on y, and I want to prove that this is an analytic function. Here I can calculate the derivation of W. I calculate dW dy, which is so h prime in x plus x q plus 1 y plus x q plus 1, which is since h satisfies the differential equation. It is equal to h, also some function of x plus x plus 1 y h x plus times x plus 1 divided by this term here, which is so x plus x k plus 1 y to the power. Here, you see that this is the. We can divide by x to the q plus 1, this thing. And this is an analytic function in x and y. Okay. Finally, dw. Dy is equal to so some analytic function in x, y, and this is w of x, y, right? So this is an analytic function square g of x w. So this is if you fix x, this is a differential equation which is non-singular, right? So the solution is non-singular also, and is analytic also. So we have W is analytic in Y for all X, and then by the analyticity of the dependence on the of the solution of analytic system from the initial condition, we get that W X Y is an analytic function in X and Y. So the argument is this analytic dependence of the solution of analytic equation with respect to the initial condition. Yes, yes, okay. Thank you. So this allows to reject all the tests we have to do to prove the minimality. And finally, we get that it is sufficient to test the quasi-analyticity only on the algebra of analytic function of H of some polynomials, because we are always able to take out the infinite part when you compose with something which is analytic. So finally, we have I need a definition first. Here you see that if you had a polynomial of order less than q plus 1, if you have something which is not of variation q plus 1, you can just take only the polynomial part until the degree q, and then take out all the rest, and the same holds if in order of x plus something, you have x to the n plus something with a polynomial maybe a little bit longer. But finally, you can just configure the h of some polynomial which is short. So I define what are these short polynomials. If the variation of t q times I is bigger than the degree of t. So this means you have a polynomial, you have something of the form x to the n p0 plus zero plus x to the q. Sorry, there is a q. Q n minus 1. Oh, this is a short polynomial. For the definition of short depends on the equation we are looking for because of the Poincaré rank here. But, and then the property is that for all f if for all analytic S and short polynomials P1, PI, short polynomials, we have the quasi-analyticity of the algebra generated by analytic function in X and H composed with the short polynomials. So this means that this is formally, if this is formally zero, this is zero, then all the big algebras that we need to prove a minimality are quasi-analytic, so it is O-minimal and polynomially bounded and so on. So, and then, O-minimal polynomial bounded on all what we need here. Well, so this property of quasi-analyticity, there is a very simple way to obtain it. Is so well, this implies this. So the simple way for it to be true is that this never happens. Right? So this is another property. So if if this never happened, of course, the proposition is true, and then we have a minimality. And the property that this never happened is is called SAT, for strongly analytic transcendence. It's a property called SAT. It's for all F analytic, for all P1, PK, short polynomials. F of X H at P1 is at P K equals 0 formally. If this is formally 0, so I would like to say it's never 0, but it's not possible because if F is 0, so this implies F equals 0. Okay. So this property implies a minimality, because it implies this condition. So now the question is how to obtain this SAT condition. So now we see first that this property is purely formal. I mean, in fact, it only deals with the Taylor development of H, right? Because you can compute this formally. And we need it to be never zero if F is not zero, right? So we can completely forget our solution H and keep in mind only its Taylor series. So we forget H, H hat. And in fact, since H satisfies a differential equation of Poincaré on Q, it seems that it means that H hat is Q somewhere. This means that you can make the Q Borel transform and the Laplace Borel transform in almost all directions. I explain it shortly. This means that the Borel transform, the formal Borel transform of order Q, Q of H, which is just a computation on this theory, will converge in the neighborhood of the origin. So it gives us a function of zeta in the Borel plane, which will converge in the neighborhood of the origin, yeah, and which can be continuated along almost all line, yeah. This means everywhere except along some infinitely many direction. So you have infinitely many directions, say here. I draw this one because in our case this will be the root of the unity. But So the Borel transform, so converge here, can be analytically continued, except along this line, it has a good exponential tip at the infinity, so you can apply the Laplace transform to this in any direction, which is not this direction, and it will give you some analytic function defined on some sectorial neighborhood of the origin. So, I will... you have this process of Borel-Laplace summation, which gives you some analytic function, which are defined in... if you choose one direction, it gives you something which is defined in a sectorial neighborhood detected by this direction, yeah, of opening, yeah, P or Q. Okay. And you can do this in almost all directions except for some of them. And by analytic continuation, you see that finally you have your... These are the direction where you cannot apply the Borel-Laplace summation, and you have some function which is defined on such a sector. Yeah. So the opening, it's just this sector when delta tends to this line, and when delta tends to this line, it is something like that. So now you can, so here, you have, I call the direction delta 0, delta 1, and 1, delta Q, delta S. You have a solution here, I call it H 1, 0, 1, because it is obtained by applying the Borel-Laplace summation along the direction which is between these two directions there. And we also have, if you do the same process between delta 0 and delta Q minus 1, we have from H Q minus 1, 0, which is defined in this sector. So you see that there is a path here where the two are defined. And in this sector, in general, they do not coincide. And the difference of the two is what is called the Stokes phenomenon. So you have here, on the intersection of the two, you have delta 0, H, which is H 0, 1, minus H, Q minus 1, 0. Okay. So the general strategy in order to prove the sub-property here is to express the Stokes phenomenon here. So I explain briefly. So you have something here which is formally zero, and you want to prove that it cannot be zero if it cannot be formally zero if F is not zero. So, for short, let us suppose that all polynomials here have the same valuation. In this case, every HCFP1 and HCFPK are all summable of the same kind. So, if you calculate F of X H 01 X 01 H 01 P 2 and the same thing with H Q minus 1 0 H Q minus 1 0, yeah. Like if you calculate these two things, you have something which is analytic function defined in some sectorial neighborhood here. The same for the second one here, which is asymptotic to zero. If you suppose that this is zero. And by Watson lemma, this implies that in fact it is exactly the zero function. Right. So the Watson lemma says that this summation is quasi-analytic in some sense. So you have something which is exactly zero there and exactly zero there. It will say that these two functions in fact are exactly zero. But on another side, you can calculate the Stoke phenomenon for H and try to deduce from this Stoke phenomenon the Stoke phenomenon for f of x of h01 composed with p with the polynomials. This means the difference of the two. And since the Stoke phenomenon for H has an exponential type and the polynomials are short, it is possible to show that in fact the difference of the two cannot be zero except if f is zero. So this is a general strategy, and actually I don't have the time to do it for in this case, but just to explain a little bit more. So the general strategy is to calculate the Stoke phenomenon here and to try to prove that it is not possible that these two are asymptotic to zero. Except if f is zero. So in general, you have some polynomials here that have a different variation, so that here you have some multi-summable function, and you have the same kind of lemma as the Watson lemma. You can deduce that if these two things are exponentially, asymptotically zero, the difference of the two has to have an exponential order which is more flat than the Stoke phenomenon for H, okay? Or for H composed with a polynomial. And on the other hand, since the Stoke phenomenon of H here it is the difference of these two things which verify, or each of one verify an equation. So the same equation. So the Stoke phenomenon verifies the equation without the constant term, the homogeneous equation. And in our case, since it is linear, we can calculate explicitly the Stoke phenomenon in terms of development with some exponential, and then we are able to conclude by an argument of independence of some function over series. So, thank you.
Yeah. Now this top, how does that imply
omni-mass? Actually, it implies the property, I don't know if it's there. No. So the property that the same one, except that this implies that f of x h set p1 h set pk equals to zero, of course. So, and this is enough to prove that a big algebra which contains all the H and which is stable under some classical operations, or take an implicit function and so on, is quasi-analytic, and this quasi-analyticity in general implies omni-minimality. It's a long process.